Thank you very much for being here. Your Graces, Reverend Fathers, Baroness, Your Serene Highness and Sir Anthony, Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen. I feel I'm probably the least educated of you here and the least informed. And so first and foremost, I'm here to learn. And what a wonderful blessing it is that we are here to learn from people who are so scholarly and who aren't even Coptic or Egyptian. But as I was saying in this morning's inaugural session, that's not so uncommon because we all know that eating out is better than mum's homemade meal. And quite often, those who look from the outside value far more greatly what we might have. I'm very thankful to you, Professor, tonight, because you have brought together something quite miraculously that could not have been done physically. And I was sitting there thinking, if all the cynics could be here right now, what a wonderful marriage between the evil of technology and the uselessness of religion. That would be a real lesson for everyone. I'm also thankful to the British Museum, to Neil and Elizabeth, and all the work that you have done, and I'm sure will continue to do. And I'm sure we have much work ahead of us. I've seen your storerooms, and I'm sure that we'll be able to do more and more. Not only to show Coptic culture for what it is, but to bring it to life. Thankful to Dr. Mariam Ayed, of course. I embarrass Mariam every time by saying I've known her now for 25 years, so she was about 12 when I met her. She was still a student at the AUC working on a site on a monastery in Wadi Natroun, and I hosted her at the papal residence back then. And what a wonderful relationship it has turned out to be. So thank you, Mariam, because you have brought this together, along with Minette, sitting back inconspicuously, but working as hard as always, and everyone who has worked so much over the past 2 years to bring this symposium to light. You see, being Coptic is both an immense privilege and presents a significant obstacle. As I've told many of my friends, sometimes I wish I was just Greek or Russian. Because when you say that you're Greek Orthodox or Russian Orthodox, it's self-explanatory. But when you say you're Coptic Orthodox, you have to explain that Coptic comes from Egyptus, which is Greek, and you have to go through that. And some of you here would have heard this story. I'm sorry if I'm repeating it, but I say that because I was once traveling to one of our parishes and stopped, and a gentleman with a rucksack with a sign, because he was trying to get a ride somewhere, said, "Good morning, Padre," and I said, "Good morning." And he said, which church are you from? And it was far too early in the morning to go through the Greek, Russian, Serbian paradigm. So I said, "I'm Egyptian Orthodox." He said, "Oh, so you're Coptic." That's what you get from lapsed theologians. And so what does Coptic really mean? It means so many different things to so many different people. For some, it is religion. For others, it is faith. For others, it is ethnicity. For others, it is nationality. And so for us to come together and speak about Coptic culture is so very important. Because culture is not the place of antiquity. It has flagged up through antiquity, but it presents life. And for us, it is life. It's interesting that I'm here today, and 2 weeks ago, I was in Egypt's Red Sea area with other bishops, priests, laity from around the world, representing our own Coptic presence in the expansion. And lo and behold, we were speaking about vestments, language, hymnology, texts. We were speaking about how to adapt those to where we are today and how to live through those where we are today. So this 2,000-year journey is not just one for the history books. It is one that really means something to us today. Who are we at our core? And how do we live today, progressively? This shows such a wonderful marriage between a very rich culture and history and very dynamic and vibrant presence. I've always said that the church is always spoken of as the body of Christ. And so a body must be dynamic, living, and responsive. If it's not, it's dead. And so for us to look at our culture, to look at our history, to look at our past, and to consider where we are today and where we go from here is a wonderful way of looking at that dynamically. It's also a wonderful way of seeing how that works, not within an Egyptian setting where the church was established, but now all over the world, with the growth of the church over the past 50 years, expanding to continents, other cultures and languages and expressions. Alan Watts says, "We seldom realize, for example, that our most private thoughts and emotions are not actually our own. For we think in terms of language and images which we do not invent, but which are given to us." And this is what we're exploring today. What has been given to us and how we translate that into our current thoughts and words and dreams for the future. This can also be translated scripturally into a verse from Ecclesiastes 3 that says, "So I perceived that nothing is better than a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his heritage." The works we have now are the results of our heritage. The works of the future will be the result of what now will be somebody else's heritage. So this is a continuity. It's a journey. All we are doing is we are one link in a very long chain that continues not only to represent a way of life from the past, but presents true living people here. That particularly speaks when we speak to so many who would look at the fact that we have no need for religion anymore, no need for faith anymore, no need to study the past, but merely live here and now. I am in such incredible presence and company that I do not need to expand on the fact that without that history, without that heritage, without ongoing work, and without ongoing witness, that there would be here or now. And if we don't do that now, what will our future look like? Thank you once again. Thank you for your presence, and thank you for your support.